Warning. The following broadcast you're about to listen to is filled to the brim with explicit adult language and content. Don't like it? Don't listen to it. Don't complain about it. Just ignore it. If you like it or don't mind it, then listen up and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Monday, May 24th, 2021. This is episode 90. A lot of cool shit obviously been going on the GW end of things. You know, last time we talked about all their new announcements and shit with the Warhammer Week, and we'll be going over some other cool shit. They got another preview coming up this week. They just did a preview last weekend. All sorts of shit. But let's start off with what's going on in my neck of the woods. So, hobbying-wise, I'm trying to think. We haven't done much for hobby stuff lately. We have been playing, though. We've been playing Cursed City, and holy mother of dick balls. Last night, we had two games. We played two games because, our first game was done and over with in a handful of turns because everybody got wiped out. We didn't even leave the fucking drop zone. We had like this perfect storm of bad rolls. Well, good rolls for, you know, the baddies, and horrifying rolls for us. Every single hostile group managed to roll exactly what they needed to move as fast as fucking possible. You know, fast as fuckboy hours. And they were just immediately right on top of us, including Radikar the Wolf. There was a Vyrkos Bloodborne. There's a shit ton of Ulfenwatch with fucking Halgrim. It was a goddamn mess. And we got fucking rolled. Nobody died permanently. All four characters just out of action, and we fucking failed. It was actually the first time that we've had like a full-on failure like that. We did have a fail before on a deliverance journey, if I remember correctly. I don't remember the details of it and stuff. But we did a lot of stuff wrong because it was our first deliverance journey. And, I mean a lot of stuff wrong. I don't remember if we actually finished the journey or not because we realized that we had fucked up so much shit, with how to set it up properly and do it and whatnot. So I think we did end up admittedly pulling a mulligan on that one. Just because, yeah, it was just a fucking mess and a half that we were not playing it right anyways. But I don't remember if we did a mulligan on that one or not. Maybe we didn't, because I don't recall ever saying, well, never mind, we're going to give us a freebie pass on that one. But anywho, point being is that I know that all four explorers survived that one all the same. And that one we actually managed to get fairly far in and whatnot. Just like I said, we did a lot of things wrong with it too. And it was just, not good. So, but last night we did a scavenge. That's when we got fucking, you know, raffle stomped and stuck in the drop zone. Literally stuck. None of the four characters ever moved out of the drop zone. It was a fucking disaster. But nobody died. And then we played a deliverance right after that, and at first things started off pretty well. We were going okay, but we were drawing so many bad exploration cards, nobody to warn. We had I think her and I estimated that probably half the turns we played we either had zero destiny dice due to either bad rolls or the amount of times we had an unfulfilled destiny, rolling a one on the event table and getting no fucking destiny dice by that means was stupid. It was just bad. We estimated, once again, like about 50, 50% of the time, we either had zero dice or we started off with like one shitty one, maybe. It was very rare that we got any decent dice beyond that. Our characters all rolled bad dice for the most part, and when they rolled really good dice, it was fucking pointless shit because they weren't going to be able to use them anyways for anything fancy. It was just a fucking disaster. We did manage to almost finish that journey, and we kept getting caught up by the Gravetide. It had kind of sat on top of us. Once again, really bad rolls. We ended up getting held up in one small room when Gorslav, the Gravekeeper, and some dead walkers popped up in that in the next room. And they came barging in. If I remember correctly, it was next room. Either way, they stopped us from moving forward. Gravetide caught up, started hurting a bunch of people and shit from then on. And we lost a couple characters to the Gravetide itself. And then when we were looking like, well, we actually might pull this off, we finally are getting some cards with warnings available. But we also are now in Nightfall, so enemies are way more powerful. I will say my least favorite enemy when night falls is surprisingly the Deadwalker zombies. They are... at least as far as the ones that we've battled against so far at Nightfall, they go from being basically just slow-moving chaff that you can, for the most part, ignore, or at least kill pretty easily, and instead they become this rabbit-fucking multiplying force that runs around really fast. They like I said, they just fuck like rabbits, and which is gross because they're zombies. And more of them show up, you get fucking swamped. It's a joke. So we failed that deliverance then too. So we failed two missions in a row. Once again, emphasizing the first one being a spectacular, perfect storm of bullshit. I don't think, when you talk about playing a perfect game, this would be whatever the polar fucking opposite was. It was embarrassing. It was just, I don't know. It defied, it literally defied the statistics of dice. It was nuts. I don't think we could have made any better decisions strategically speaking because, well, we never fucking moved. So it's not like anybody really made a mistake as far as movement goes, or, using the wrong abilities, because we really couldn't open up the field enough to use most of the abilities. It is a disaster. But yeah, so the deliverance was absolutely disastrous on top of that. We did end up losing our first character permanently for our campaign. Jelson Derek is no more, which sucks because I was actually just starting to get in the groove with him. Usually Krista and I, we each have like favorite characters that we play, and and so we tend to stick to not necessarily the same two a piece, but the same, like there's eight of them, so we each kind of stick to the same four. We decided to start experimenting a little bit, trying out each other's characters and whatnot, and she did find that one of the characters I was using fairly frequently she enjoyed a lot more than some of the other characters she had. And vice versa. She was initially playing Jelson. She wasn't really digging him. I ended up picking him up at one point and being like, yeah, I really like this. This is good. This is fun. Don't know what else to say except for I will never play him again in this campaign. So, yeah. So it kind of sucks having a new favorite just permanently out of the game. And then on top of that, that's one step closer to losing the game. If we keep this up much more, we will probably have to restart our entire campaign. I've done episodes about this before when it comes to playing like 40K or Age of Sigmar and stuff about kind of looking back at your game, you know, we all, or a lot of us have a tendency, oh, the fucking dice. I got fucked by the dice. The dice are bullshit. You know, it's a game of pure luck, pure chance. But, you know, it's pure luck and pure chance when you're losing, but it's always your strategic mastery when you're winning. You know, but I've talked before about going back after you've kind of calmed down, after you're, you know, no longer on tilt, and, you know, kind of addressing, did I actually get fucked by the dice, or was it me? And guess what? 99.99999 continuous percent of the fucking time, the dice ain't got shit to do with it. Okay, I shouldn't say, you know, that they have nothing to do with it, but they're not your main fucking problem. Most of the time, your main fucking problem is you made a bunch of bad fucking decisions and you fucked yourself over really awfully. I can openly admit that on several times that I played games and been, you know, once again, I get on tilt in the middle of it going, man, these dice are garbage. This shouldn't be happening. And then afterwards I go, you know, there were a lot of ways that, yeah, I couldn't necessarily change the dice, you know, and the dice were against me, but I could have done this differently. I could have done that differently. This. I may not have even been in the situation where these dice killed me because had I chosen to do this instead, you know, so on and so forth. These two games back to back, I cannot say that about them. I have been mulling it over in my head since we finished them last night. Yeah, you know, I even spent a decent amount of time at work today when I had downtime, just like in my back of my mind, just kind of processing through those games from last night. And yeah, I legitimately at this point, you know, I'll keep thinking about it, see if I can find something, because as far as I'm concerned, it's important to learn from your mistakes. You know, it's a good lesson in life. But no, learn from your mistakes, you know, that's how you get better. Get good, scrub. But in this case, I don't think we made any fucking mistakes. We really did not make any mistakes. This was purely just the luck of the fucking draw and luck of the fucking dice. You know, there was no strategic, fuck ups. Realistically, I think, there's a few minor hiccups at best that when I've thought about it over and over again, I'm like, these really didn't change shit, at all. So it just, I don't know. It's just fucking awful. Are we going to keep playing Curse City? Oh, fuck yeah, we are. Curse City's goddamn amazing. Love it. It is a fantastic game. Cannot comment on its quality enough. I really hope GW gets off their asses and unfucks the fuckery that they fucked and puts out some fucking expansions. Even just fucking White Dwarf articles that add new characters and shit. I don't give a fuck. We need more Curse City. This game is fucking baller as fuck. So let's do it. So, but yeah. In case that rant wasn't obvious, my neck of the woods, games have been bullshit. So, but yeah, let's go ahead and get on up into the newsy bits here. I did mention briefly that there was a preview this past weekend. There is a preview coming up this coming weekend. Last weekend's was the Warhammer Animation preview. And the internet's definitely got some mixed feelings as far as some of the stuff they announced. But yeah, as far as like stuff they showed off, there really wasn't that much, realistically speaking. There just wasn't that much content that they actually showed. It's more fucking teaser trailers galore, which is what they've been doing with this whole Warhammer Animation thing since they first announced it. It's just little snippets here and there. We've not really seen much beyond that. We did get to see the first 7 minutes of Angels of Death. And watching those 7 minutes, it starts, you know, and also just spoiler alert, I'm going to be brutally honest about my feelings throughout this whole thing. In case, you know, if you're new to the, you know, my show here and stuff, that's just how I roll anyways. You know, I don't do hot takes to be some sort of fucking edgelord or something like that. It's just legitimately how I feel. So, but, yeah, so first 7 minutes of Angel's death. One more spoiler alert. There's going to be spoilers. So, yeah. Anywho, let's keep going. First 7 minutes of Angels of Death was boring. There, I said it. It's got some cool potential. I really like the art style. For those who haven't seen it, it's kind of got the Schindler's List thing going on, which is kind of weird. But everything is in this really deep black and white you know, appearance, except for reds. Reds stand out. But unlike, you know, Schindler's List just had, if I remember correctly, just that one little bit of red that stood out at one point in the movie, just randomly. It's been years since I've seen it, so forgive me if I speak incorrectly. This, you know, there's blood angels and stuff, so there's a lot, you know, a lot of red, but that's all it is monochrome black and white and then red. Yeah, it first starts off with, you know, dude, Terminator armor, shit ton of gene stealers, he's mowing them down. Outside of the fact that it's, you know, ooh, exciting action, it seemed pretty decent. But then it actually, that was just kind of like a weird little, I don't know, pre-credits, thing. So then it actually gets into the first actual scene of the show. And it's, you know, I watched almost the whole thing. I admit I haven't finished it. So maybe the last like couple minutes has some crazy ass shit, going on. And I'm talking out of my ass, and in which case, if I watch it again and stuff, you know, I will finish it at some point. And I'll, you know, call myself out on my own bullshit. I always do if I do, you know, say some dumb shit. So, but anywho, yeah, it's just, you know, the next several minutes is just, some blood angel and a blood angel's chaplain just kind of sitting there all like, oh man, you're doing a thing and man, you're kind of, you know, a dick. And then that's the chaplain saying to the other dude, you're kind of a dick and I don't get why. And then the other guy's like, 'cause I'm all like brooding and shitty about it. That's realistically all it fucking was this weird conversation between these two characters. And it had some of that stilted feeling of, you know, trying to both appeal to fans as well as introduce people who have no idea what's going on to the universe. And I get why that's necessary. I get why it's important even, you know, it really is, but it takes some doing to pull it off right, typically speaking. And in this case, there was just one particular, you know, one particular line where a guy brings up something about the Death Watch. You know, he points at his shoulder pad and then the camera just kind of focuses right in on it. And he's like, oh, your time in the Death Watch? And then even the dude himself looks at his shoulder pad like, oh, yeah, I forgot I'm wearing that. I don't know, it's just kind of like this weird, all right, well, I guess we're setting up characters, but in a stilted fashion. The voices didn't match the faces. I mean that both in terms of, you know, kind of like, you know, radio hosts where you see them for the first time, you go, whoa, I never thought that was the guy behind the voice, you know, that it just doesn't match what you imagined in your mind. So there's a little bit of that, but then there's literally the voices do not match the faces. The animation is pretty good, but it's got some imperfections, namely in character facial movements and stuff. It looks to me like they actually are really well done, but they don't match the voices. They don't match the words that are coming out of their mouths and stuff. It's got a little bit of that anime effect, which is really weird with how photorealistic everything else is otherwise. It's not 100% photorealistic because of all the black, white, and red. And last I knew, looking around the world, it's not all black and white and red. But you get my point, is that it's supposed to be going for super high-end, fancy computer graphics here. Wow, computer graphics? Why did I say it that way? Oh, who fucking cares? Anywho, it's supposed to be super fancy, and there's just something there that feels a little slightly off. Am I going to watch the show when it's finally released? Yes. I'm not going to judge it right now, like, oh, this is going to be garbage, it's going to be crap, because I saw 7 minutes of okay at best footage. I'm really excited to see more. I really am. But I feel like they did not put their best foot forward as far as showing that off is concerned. And then they did, however, announce a whole shit ton of other shows, which is cool. Excited about all that. They did show off a teaser trailer that showed off pretty much a little bit. I don't know if it was a little bit of every show. I think so. It's at least a little bit of most of their shows. And what little tiny tidbits we saw were, you know, they were cool. They were intriguing, at least. So I'm interested. Then we get to Warhammer Plus. Now, this is where the divisive topic is at. Warhammer Plus is kind of what you might guess it is. Kind of like Disney Plus, but for fucking Grim Darkness shit. It is going to be a paid subscription service, like Disney Plus, Netflix, blah, blah, blah. And that is how you will watch these shows. Now, they did not announce specific details about Warhammer Plus other than it's going to be available supposedly on any, you know, VOD device. So I'm hoping my Roku will be able to get it because I want to be able to watch it on my TV. So there's that. It'll have a subscription cost involved. They didn't go into specifics on that. Don't know when exactly any of this is coming out either on top of that. They did say that June 23rd, so a month from now, they will be showing off, more information, more specifics about how Warhammer Plus will work. Now, the one thing I will say is that it does state, interestingly enough, in the article here. Well, let me pull the article itself up for the specific wording. Here we go. Of course, Warhammer Plus will offer far more than these animations. The full lineup and awesome subscriber benefits will blow your socks off. So, the first part, mentioning far more than these animations and the full lineup, suggests, that, yeah, while they've announced all these different shows, there are more shows on the way on top of that. So, it's just more of that stuff. But when it says awesome subscriber benefits will blow your socks off, typically speaking, the subscriber benefit for most VOD services is, you get to use the VOD service. That's the fucking point. So either GW doesn't get it that that's not really a benefit because that's just why you're paying for the service in the first place. You know, when I think of benefits, I think of them as extra stuff. You know, it's not the main course of the service. It is, extra, it's a plus. To what you're buying. What could that mean? It could mean indeed that it's just them talking about the awesome ability to watch our shows, which once again, no, that's dumb to put it that way. Please don't do that. But it could suggest that they're gonna do, I don't know, some sort of, early pre-order status, a discount program. I have no idea. GW is not known for discounting shit, so I highly doubt that that's going to be a thing. I could see them doing like, we keep running out of all these pre-orders, so why don't you go ahead and, subscribe to Warhammer Plus, and you can start pre-ordering stuff a week early. You know, maybe you won't necessarily get it early, but you'll be able to pre-order it early. All right, you know, something like that. I could see something. I don't know. I don't even know if it's a good idea, if it is a thing. Yeah, just overall, there's a lot of questions here still. I have to say, while it was cool to see some of this stuff, I just continue to be disappointed with the announcements regarding the animation thing. I feel like they're trying to keep us interested without ever showing actual fucking content. Yes, we did get a few minutes of Angels of Death. Yeah, that's a start. But otherwise, overall, it's just a bunch of stuff. Excuse me. I am very tired. I am exhausted. But I still decided to try and record today's show anyways. Because fuck it, we're gonna do it live. So, well, not live, because it's pre-recorded, but you get what I mean to some degree. Anywho, let's see here. So, beyond that, this past weekend, we did have the release of the first wave of Soulblight Gravelords. And then also, too, excuse me, we have pre-orders have started for the new AdMech Codex, data cards, dice, and the new Combat Patrol, as well as the Skitarii Marshal. I'm really excited about the Codex, really excited about the Marshal. The rest of it, take it or leave it. But if you listen to the show at all or know me personally, you know I'm all about that AdMech, so this is exciting. They are releasing Lelith Hesperax separately from Piety and Pain. The Adeptus Astartes are getting the Heavy Intercessors released separately, as well as, you know, the Duder with the Heavy Bolt Rifle. There's a new Combat Patrol. Necrons are getting their Flayed Ones, and the fucking Chronomancer, thank fuck, as well as a new Combat Patrol for them, too. So, lots of cool shit coming out for, you know, 40K, but most of it is just releasing stuff that was already, you know, released but locked in, you know, specific box sets before you could get them. So, but then on top of that, they are pre-ordering for Wave 2 of Soulblight Gravelords. There's going to be a new Start Collecting box. That's a shit ton of different Skelly Boys. The Dire Wolves will be available. Belladama Volga. Is that her name? Yes, Belladama Volga. Radikar the Beast. Kritza, Lady Annika will all be available for pre-order, as well as actually all the villains from Curse City will be available to purchase separately, which is good because they do have War Scrolls in the Soulblight Gravelords book. There is a major shitty disadvantage to them. I haven't looked at all their War Scrolls to even know if they're really cool or terrible or what, but I thought thematically it'd be kind of cool to have like Gorslav, because I just love that fucking model, you know, or Halgrim out there. The Virkos and the Vargskir work as well really well. You know, overall it'd be cool to have all these models out on the field, but I don't necessarily want to deploy all of them on the field at the same game. But guess what? If you're playing a matched game, you're fucked. You have to either deploy all of them or none of them. And I think they're like 755 points, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. I'm not a piece, fortunately. But you have to, yeah, purchase them all together as one unit. They don't move around as a unit. They all are separate units as far as deployment and movement and so on and so forth. As far as, you know, paying for them and getting them onto the field, you have to buy the whole fucking group of them, which is horseshit. So, not a fan of that at all. Really disappointed. But, anywho, Dire Chasm, they are releasing the Ossiarch Bone Reapers Warband, which has some cool looking shit in it. Namely, the dude man himself, I think his name's Kanan. Whatever his fucking name is, he just looks like a super badass with some major big dick energy going on. So, there's that. I got really confused that it was like Hivor is available to pre-order. I was like, Hivor's been out, I thought. Pre-order now in China and Japan, because apparently they didn't have it before. So, good news if you're listening to me and you're from China and Japan. You can pre-order Hivor. For everybody else, who gives a fuck? It's Hivor and it's been out. So, but yeah. Beyond that, there's not much else as far as other stuff I want to cover out of the newsy bits. I will say that there is from today a new Battle Sister bulletin, that does cover some of the stuff in the new book, that is coming out, but I do not know, let's see here. Does it tell us when the book is coming out actually? It's out soon. So, yeah, no, we don't have an idea of when it's coming out right now. But I haven't looked over the article myself, so I'm not even going to begin to comment on it. But if you're interested, it is there. So, all right, that being said, let's go ahead and take a break. When I come back from the break, we are going to go ahead and start covering some more of the Drukhari Codex. Or as my wife thinks I am saying, the Drukhari Codex, Ohio. We'll get into a little bit more of that, so stick around. Welcome back to the Regimental Vox. We're going to go ahead and pick up our Codex Drukhari review, deep dive, analysis, whatever you want to call it. Analysis starts with the word anal, which is fun. Once again, interest of time, we're going to do a little chunk again this week. I know I keep saying I'm going to try and get just do a bigger chunk. And I was legitimately planning to this past week, but I had a lot of shit going on. Not just work related. I had some personal business that was kind of on my mind, kind of in the background noise and taking up a lot of my mental processing power. But as of today, it is all resolved. So life can move on, and that's what we're going to do. So, but in turn, I don't have as much time today as I was hoping to. I was planning to kind of do this all over the past week, just record a bunch of little bits and put them together. But instead, we're going to do this. So my hope and plan is that I will get an opportunity to still do that whole putting it together thing throughout the week. If possible. So, but we shall see. So, and totally random, I forgot to mention this. You know, I talked about last week's preview. I'm pretty certain I forgot to mention this. I talked about last week's preview. This week's preview, at first I didn't know what the fuck it was about, because I must have missed something. I had just seen on the This Week at Warhammer video, it was called Unboxing Dominion, and I'm like, what the fuck is Dominion? And I poked around and I could find absolutely nothing about it. So unless I'm completely stupid and missed something, I don't think they had even said what it was. So it's just kind of a weird title. Anywho, I guess Dominion's going to be kind of like Indomitus was for 40K. It's going to be the AOS fancy starter set. So just wanted to get that out of the way, because I meant to mention it earlier and I fucked up and forgot. Because I fuck up and forget a lot, in case that wasn't obvious. So, anywho, so today we're going to go ahead and cover the witch cults, probably still save then the homunculus covens, and then the rest of the book for another day. We'll see how far we get time-wise, and then we'll go from there. So, but we can't get into it if I keep rambling, so let's do this. Starting with the Cult of Strife. So the Cult of Strife is, I think that's the one with Lelith Hesperax. I think that is her whole dealio, if I am recalling correctly. I'm trying to flip pages as fast as I can. You can't catch me. I'm really bad at pages. That didn't work at all. Come on, pages. All right, Lelith Hesperax. Yes, I was right. A lot of second-guessing has led to more time wasted. Moving on. So, obsession, the spectacle of murder. At the start of the fight phase, if a unit with this obsession is within engagement range of any enemy units, it can fight first that phase. Fighting first, always a powerful move. Assuming that your opponent isn't also fighting first for some reason. So, But yeah, the ability to fight first can really change up the tempo of close combat quite a bit. So you can find yourself where you would have been in a shitty position no longer. It definitely makes your opponent second guess about even charging in at you. So each time you declare a charge for a unit with this obsession, if there are no other units from your army within engagement range of any of the enemy units selected as targets of that charge, add one to the charge roll. Being able to, you know, modify your charge roll is quite useful, typically speaking. At least in my experience, I usually find that my charge rolls are terrible. You know, the if you figure the average roll on 2d6 is 7, you want to try and stick to 7 or less, as far as distance goes from the enemy, in this case 8 or less, and that little bit can make it quite the difference. There is a catch in that you do have to, you know, you can't charge at the same thing that someone else is already fighting. So dogpiling isn't going to happen with this ability. The idea is to spread your forces out, which when you're talking about rather fragile units can be a bit of a problem. But given the, you know, natural close combat capabilities of witches and the succubi and so on and so forth, you're usually not in that bad of a shitty way anyways in close combat to need to dogpile. So but just keep in mind glass cannons. Warlord trait, Blood Dancer. Hold me closer, Blood Dancer. Each time this warlord makes a melee attack, an unmodified hit roll of 6 scores 2 additional hits. You know, definitely a cool little ability. I'm trying to actually flip ahead here to the succubus thing, because obviously they do have to be your warlord, or if you're using like the real space raid or other special stratagem abilities and stuff, you might be able to access it, but otherwise you have to have you know, someone from your witch cult as your warlord, in case that wasn't obvious. But no, that's Hesperax, but she gets 7 attacks. That might even be her default warlord trait. I'd have to double check that. The succubus though gets 6 attacks, so being able to turn 6 into 12 is definitely nothing to scoff at. Scores 2 additional hits. My apologies. So up to 18 potential hits. Keep in mind that these are hits, not damage, which does mean that you are going to be able to spread it out amongst several targets. Cool story, bro, as far as this situation goes. You could be looking at, you know, if you're up against a horde, killing 18 models in one hit, one round. So impressive. Mind you, I talk a lot about, you know, maximum potentials. They are just that, maximum potentials. Don't base your gameplay around, I totally going to be able to do this all the time. No, this is when you roll exceptionally well. But it's still it's a good thing to know what is my maximum output. It's still part of your strategy regardless, or should be. All right. Then we have Relic, the field bouquet, man, I really got to start just cracking open good old Merriam-Webster, and figuring out what the fuck everything means. But I'm assuming it's referring to vials. And maybe that's how it's pronounced even, but it's not spelled that way. And, I'm just going to keep making myself sound really, really stupid. Cult of Strife succubus model only. Roll 1d6 at the start of each battle round. Until the end of the battle round, the bearer gains the associated effect from the combat drug's ability table. This effect can be one that the bearer is already affected by and is cumulative. So the combat drugs thing, is a specific thing. Specific to witch cults and their peeps. Normally you would select, select an ability, for a specific unit. And you can do it for, you know, if you've got multiple units that use combat drugs, they don't all have to use the same combat drug. So you can either pick one from a table of 6, or you can roll 2d6. And you get to have 2 effects at random instead. And then having this thing basically lets you have whatever the matching one is on the combat drugs chart, table, thank you, brain. We'll quick run through the combat drug options here. And, you know, the numbers either correspond to the D6 rolled or also in this case specifically the battle round. So one is Adrenalite. Each time this unit fights, if it made a charge move or performed a heroic intervention this turn, then until that fight is resolved, add one to the attack's characteristics of models in this unit. Okay, that is a nice thing to have for, in particular, for like whole squads of dudes and stuff. That's going to, you know, pump out a lot more attacks. For a singular character, it's good. You know, it's you know, if especially if you got that warlord trait and stuff like that, it's definitely good. It's not bad, but hence why I say it's good. But it's also not going to typically be earth shattering. But the more attacks, the merrier at the same time. So I'm kind of ambivalent about this one, I guess. More leaning towards good. Anywho, two, Grave Lotus. Add one to the strength characteristic of models in this unit. We've been over this many times, but my feeling about strength boosts, they typically are not super worthwhile. Although, in this case, most of the units that can have access to it would normally be striking at strength 3, whereas strength 4 is typically a bit more of a game changer. You know, the jump from 3 to 4 is typically a lot more useful than the jump, say, from 4 to 5. Is not going to typically change as many situations and scenarios you might find your units involved in. You know, it depends on the enemy, depends on the target, so on and so forth, but typically jumping from 3 to 4 is a huge boon overall. So yeah, I am going to say in this case it's still situational, but in the, given the general situation you'll find yourself in with Drukhari strength wise it's good. 3, Hypex. Add 2 inches to the move characteristic of models in this unit. Now, that right there, movement wins your games. And I know I talked last episode about how the one Cabal with all the flying shit and moving faster is not that big of a deal. I still stand by that because it's not that much of a change for models that are already moving stupidly fast. Every little bit does help, but it's not as much of a big fucking deal. Adding 2 inches, though... yeah, it just popped into my head what that sounds like outside of context. Anywho, adding an extra 2 inches to your, you know, witches or any other, you know, foot models is definitely going to make a difference. That movement wins games. I've emphasized that in a lot of episodes. Movement fucking wins your games. So, yes, this is a very good one. Painbringer, number 4, add 1 to the toughness characteristic of models in this unit. So, given the fact that Drukhari fold like a wet paper bag under pressure, boosting your toughness may sound useful, but most of these models are going to go from toughness 3 to toughness 4, and then you find yourself in the same boat that I was just talking about not that long ago, but in reverse. A lot of opponents strike at strength 4. A lot of your primary opponents that you might be facing will be striking at strength 4 to begin with. So, yes, they're no longer wounding you on 3s. They're wounding you on 4s. So that is a really significant jump in defense. But it's typically not going to result in you suddenly just being super defensible and tanky. So this is good. It is useful. It's not mind-boggling. Number 5, Serpentine. Improve the weapon skill characteristics of models in this unit by 1. Let me see here. Are they only striking? They're probably typically striking on 3s, for the fucking, witches. Yeah, they're typically striking on 3s. Going up to a 2+, yeah, you know, a 2+ is always a great roll. It's the best you can manage, so fuck it, yeah. I like that. And then lastly, 6, Splinter Mind. Improve the ballistic skill and leadership characteristics of models in this unit by 1. No. Absolutely not. Just given the fact that which character, or excuse me, which models can use the combat drugs in the first place, it's not that useful. Leadership is rarely a problem, at least not an excessive problem to the point where adding that one is a huge boon to you. Witches do have, each of them has a splinter pistol, which is helpful to have. It's useful to have, but your, strength 2, AP 0, 1 damage, pistol 1 at 12 inches. It's poison weapon, so it's 4 plus. I would much rather, you're going to get more mileage basically out of the fucking weapon skill boost. Over the ballistic skill boost. It's simple as that. At least if you're playing your witches like you should be playing your witches, you're going to get more benefit going that way. So, and then the other characters and stuff that would primarily use it, namely the Succubus and Lelith Hesperax, they don't need either of those things. Oh, Lelith actually does not get combat drugs. Okay. But still, either way, I'm not entirely surprised, actually, thinking about it from a balance perspective. She's already crazy, stupidly powerful as it fucking is. So, so those are the combat drugs. So, take for example, you roll 2d6. You got, we'll just say you got Hypex and Grave Lotus. A 2 and a 3. On turn 2, you're gonna add 2 strength to your models because it'll be on turn 2. So you get Grave Lotus from that. Keep in mind, it's a relic, so it's only specific to the character that's using it. But still, you'll get +2 to your strength. That might make a bit of a difference, maybe. And on turn 3, you're going to add 4 to your movement. These being able to get extra combat drugs, extra powers, is great. Even some of these powers that aren't as good, minus Splinter Mind. Splinter Mind, for the most part, is going to be pretty fucking useless for whatever character is using the relic, considering you're going to be hitting on 2s to begin with. Your Succubus is Leadership 8 to begin with. It's not going to fucking change your fucking world by any stretch of the goddamn imagination. Still, I would say it's useful, if not mind-blowing. Lastly, we have the stratagem No Method of Death Beyond Our Grasp. It's 2 CP. You use it at the end of your shooting phase or fight phase. You select one Cult of Strife Witches unit from your army. If it's the shooting phase, they can shoot again. If it's the fight phase and within engagement range, they can fight again. You can only use the stratagem once per battle round. Save it for your fucking fight phase. I mean, seriously, unless none of your witches are going to be in combat this turn and they're all able to shoot, but there's no way they could be in combat, which isn't going to happen because you've got a 12-inch fucking range on your guns, you're not going to use this to shoot at stuff. It's almost guaranteed. A fantastic choice for fighting. Great choice. Assuming your witches are still alive. Once again, glass cannons. The ability to fight again is fantastic. So next we have Cult of Strife is good. Cult of the Cursed Blade, Obsession. Only the strong will thrive. Add 1 to the strength characteristic of models with this obsession. I'm not going to reiterate how I feel about that. Each time you make an unmodified saving throw of 6 for a model with this obsession against a melee attack, after the attacking model's unit has finished making its attacks, that enemy unit suffers 1 mortal wound. That is cool. That is nice. It's very, very specific. You have to be in close combat, which most of the time you'll be shooting to get these guys into close combat anyways. And then your enemy has to hit you. They have to wound you. And then you have to be able to even make your saving throw. Which, admittedly, I think they get an invulnerable save anyways, but still, you got to get a 6 in order to pull this off. So, yeah, you're going to probably give your enemy a few dings here and there. You might make an opponent think twice about striking at you, but for the most part, statistically speaking, you're not going to probably be enough of a threat for them to not consider doing that. But, So it's a cool little piece of kit. It's not going to change your game, most likely. Warlord trait, Treacherous Deceiver. Each time you make an unmodified saving throw of 4+ for this warlord against a melee attack, after the attacking model's unit has finished making its attacks, they suffer one mortal wound. This warlord does not benefit from the second part of the Cursed Blades, only the strong will thrive obsession. So it basically just gives him a boost on that part, which admittedly a 4+ roll is a lot better. You know, thinking about it too, with the wording there, even if for some reason they did not pass their saving throw with a 4, technically it says you make an unmodified saving throw of 4+. I'd have to look into it more, but I guess you could still take damage because your, you know, armor got cut through or whatever. Unless they already have a 4+ invuln, which they might. The succubus and stuff might actually already have one going down in Chinatown. That's Drazar. And succubus. Yeah, they already have a 4+ invuln. So yeah, you're gonna get that every turn then. So yeah, you know, that is more useful. It's not gonna blow my mind once again, but yeah, it's only useful against melee attacks, which once again you're gonna probably be in melee a lot. Relic, Traitor's Embrace, Cult of the Cursed Blade succubus model only. If the bearer is destroyed by a melee attack, roll 1d6 on a 2+. After the attacking model's unit has finished making its attacks, it suffers d3+3 mortal wounds. So yeah, all right, this basically is based on the idea that you plan for whoever's carrying this, possibly your warlord, but probably not, but you plan on this person dying at some point, and when they die, you're planning on basically having them explode. Is this bad? No, I mean, 2+ is pretty high odds it'll go off. If you get a 1, then it's a wasted fucking relic. Yeah, on a 2+, your opponent gets d3+3 mortal wounds. That could just flat out, if you're going toe-to-toe with the enemy's warlord, yeah, you might be dead, but you're taking him down with you. So, but this once again is based on the idea of killing your opponent to make it useful. Although I will say that it could make a wily opponent potentially decide to either throw something garbage at you that they know they can kill you, or at least do some damage to you, and if they get lucky, kill you. And then if they lose the model in the process, they don't care. But also, too, it will make a lot of opponents perhaps think twice about charging in to kill your dude with some special fancy warlord guy that they got going on, and have them suddenly end up, you know, getting hit with 6 wounds, mortal wounds, and just being toast. So yeah, I would say that that's, you know, good as far as a mindfuck thing, not good as far as the actual output of it for yourself.
Just don't plan on, you know, winning games using that specific thing. It's a bad plan. So moving on, though, we've next got their stratagem, Venomous Shard Bombs. Would have been funnier if they were shark bombs, but no. 1 CP, use this stratagem after the enemy has declared a charge against a Cult of the Cursed Blade Witches unit from your army. That unit can fire Overwatch before the charge roll is made. When it does so, up to 5 models in that unit that are equipped with plasma grenades can make attacks with them, and until the end of the phase, plasma grenades this unit is equipped with gain the poisoned 2+ ability. So, let me see here. As far as the poison things, no, the plasma grenades are concerned. Plasma grenades, 6 inches, grenade D6, strength 4, neg 1 AP, damage 1, and it's a blast weapon. So yeah, I mean, being able to use 5 of those at once, you know, that's, you're looking at anywhere from 5 to 30 attacks, and then
at strength four, you're already probably doing, you know, a decent amount of wounds on four ups, but now you're looking at two plus, so it's, you know, a fantastic improvement with the neg one AP. This is a very powerful stratagem, I would say, for the one CP. It is specific that it has to be the witches, but, you know, using a character to get, you know, one, a little boost to your grenade on the Overwatch isn't that crazy. Yeah, I would say that this is a good stratagem. Overall, as far as the witch cult as a whole goes, there's a whole lot of, you know, defensive stuff, or rather making sure that the enemy pays for attacking you. But, you know, once again, it's not stuff you would necessarily build your victory off of. Yeah, you're going to do some damage to the enemy and stuff. But considering that normally you're going to have, six ups for your invuln saves at best anyways, for most of your models, it's not that likely to go off all that frequently. So yeah, that part of the obsession isn't going to happen very often. The plus one to your strength characteristic, yes, fours are much, much, much better, typically speaking, than threes. But, you know, it's, I don't know, I don't think it's that much of an improvement still to make it worth, you know, basing your whole army around it. But, you know, it's situation dependent against which opponent and stuff. The relic is just kind of silly, in my opinion. It's literally, I can't wait to die, so I may potentially hurt the opponent. I like the stratagem, though. You know, being able to pump out five blasts of, you know, D6 a piece. I mean, mind you, you could roll really shitty and you only get five attacks, but you, once again, maximum output, you could be looking at 30. More likely looking at somewhere in between. So, next up we have the Cult of the Red Grief. Obsession, the speed of the kill. You could reroll charge rolls made for units with this obsession and add two to advance rolls made for units with this obsession. Okay, so being able to reroll charge rolls on dedicated assault units is very awesome. I think Bloodletters had something similar, or at least back in 8th edition, I played one game trying out playing a Chaos Demons army with a bunch of Bloodletters. And if I remember correctly, they had some ability and it like that, and it really paid off. I did lose that game in the long run. Once again, kind of like we were talking about with Cursed City, some really shit rolls on one turn. Even my opponent had mentioned, you know, when on my first turn, I really came out hard out of the gate. But apparently, all of my luck was used on that first turn, because after that, it was just downhill from there. You know, he was overwhelmed almost to begin with. He was like, uh-oh, I think I've already lost this. And instead, by mid-game, he had totally torn his way out of the situation. And yeah, like I said, even he was shocked. But yeah, being able to reroll your charges, very, very useful. Being able to boost your advance rolls, also useful. Once again, movement wins games. Yeah, typically speaking, you're going to advance. You're not going to be doing any attacking or whatever else. But if you're too far from an opponent, you might not be attacking them that turn. But hopefully you'll get a chance to attack them in another turn. I feel like somewhere, and maybe I'm getting this mixed up with something else, but I feel like somewhere I remember seeing something that would allow the units to advance and charge on the same turn. I may be thinking of something else altogether, you know, completely crazy. But either way, if that's available, cool. If it's not, this is still good. Warlord trait, hyper swift reflexes. Each time a melee attack is made against this warlord, an unmodified hit roll of 1 through 3 for that attack fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or the model making the attack may have. Being able to keep your warlord alive is useful.
Being able to ignore anything below a 4 is very, very useful. But, you know, personally, as once again I've mentioned in many other episodes, I prefer Warlord abilities that don't just protect the Warlord. You know, the Warlord traits are typically a good opportunity to provide a unique buff to the units around you. So not being a buff for other units is a bit of a bummer. But this is a really good way to defend your Warlord. So, Relic, the Blood Glaive, Cult of the Red Grief Succubus model equipped with an Archite Glaive only. It replaces that. So, let's go ahead and find that Archite Glaive thing. Oh, my brain cannot think of it. The stat line for it. Here we go. Okay, Archite Glaive is strength plus 2, AP negative 3, and 1 damage. So typically for Succubus, they'd be striking at strength 5 with an AP neg 3. That's pretty good. The Blood Glaive is going to do the same stuff, except it's damage 3. So it's not doing anything crazy as far as adding any sort of unique rule or ability or anything like that using it. But having a reliable flat 3 damage is really nice, especially going up from 1 to a flat 3 is a huge boost. You know, definitely that character, that Succubus, is going to just blend through enemy characters like crazy. A wonderful assassination tool. Assuming that they survive and everything else anyways as it is. So, Athletic Aerialist is the stratagem for 1 CP. Use it after a Cult of the Red Grief infantry unit has resolved its close combat attacks, but before it makes a consolidation move. Instead of consolidating as normal, if every model from this unit is within 6 inches of a friendly Cult of the Red Grief transport unit, they can embark in that transport as if it were the movement phase, even if this unit has disembarked this turn, provided it has enough capacity remaining to embark the whole unit. Very specific, very situational, but goes back to boosting movement. The ability to just not waste turns moving towards transports, jumping in them, and so on and so forth, and just be able to say, I'm consolidating, boom, they're in the transport. A huge boost. So, overall, this cult, you know, it's not, it doesn't have anything super wicked crazy, but I think it's pretty good. I would say between the three, it's probably my second favorite. I really like the Cult of Strife the most. That whole fight first ability is just way too useful, as well as the ability to fight again using your strategy. Excuse me. Damn. I thought my second wind was here, and apparently not. But yeah, you know, I would say that the Red Grief is my second choice. The Obsession is really good. The Warlord trait is okay, but it's not bad. Admittedly, the Cult of Strife Warlord trait is also specific to the Warlord, so same deal. It's not great, but it's not bad. It is a useful... Both are useful tools, though, at least. The Relic is pretty fucking good if you put it to use the proper way. Specifically, go hunt down high value targets that have a lot of wounds. I mean, once again, maximum output wise, Succubus does 6 attacks, so you'd be looking at 18 damage off of that Blood Glaive. So at strength 5, AP neg 3, you're going to kill a lot of stuff, especially if they don't have an invuln save. You will tear your way through enemy characters and heavy infantry. So, then we have the other cults. Same deal as the other cabals, you know, the Build-A-Bear option here. You can select 2, unless it's an all-consuming obsession, then you only get that one. So, starting with Acrobatic Display, each time a unit with a obsession consolidates or piles in, models in that unit can move horizontally through other models and terrain features. Yeah, that's useful. Once again, movement wins games.
admittedly, I would say that most of the time your enemy's not going to be trying to pin down your models by getting into close combat with things that are already designed to tear through shit. So, you know, and those things that are tough enough to survive that sort of thing will be things that you can walk around anyways, because they're usually single targets. Yeah, this is okay. You know, movement wins games. That's a huge boost that makes this not a useless obsession, but I wouldn't say it's the whiz bang. So next we have the Art of Pain. While a unit with this obsession has the Power from Pain ability, that has that ability, excuse me, is within engagement range of any enemy units, treat the current battle round numbers being one higher than when determining what effects the Power from Pain ability has. So you might recall that the Cabal of the Black Heart, all of the units that have the Power from Pain ability, including the Blades for Hire, they all get that ability. This, however, is only while you're within engagement range. It's still a useful ability, but and it, you know, most of the time you'll be keeping your cult models in close combat when possible. But once again, very specific. Then we have Berserk Fug, Fugue, Fuju. I think it's Fug. Man, I actually know this word, and now I just sound stupid because my brain is like, how do we pronounce that again? I'm exhausted, though, so I'm going to give myself a pass. All-consuming. So this one's the only one you would get if you use it at all. Each time a model with this obsession makes a melee attack, if they made a charge move, was charged, or performed an intervention, an unmodified 6 scores one additional hit. Exploding dice are nice to have, so. And then each time a model with a obsession would lose a wound as a result of a mortal wound, roll a d6 and a 5 up, that wound is not lost. I mean, mortal wound blockers are nice because there's not a way to block them otherwise, but being relegated to only mortal wounds is not so great. So, I would say that this one overall is an okay ability. It's not blowing my mind, but it's not bad. Precise Killers. Each time a model with this obsession makes a melee attack, that attack benefits from the Blade Artist's ability on an unmodified roll of 5 up instead of 6. So, the Blade Artist's ability... And of course, I just passed the fucking thing. There it is. Each time they get an attack with a melee weapon on an unmodified wound roll of, in this case, 5... improve the AP characteristic of that attack by 1. You know, increasing the AP is typically a lot more useful than, say, increasing your strength, you know, or something lesser so overall. You know, typically, let's see here. So most of these witches would be armed with a Hecatari blade. So a whole unit of witches, is going to be doing, neg 2 on the AP, which, yeah, that can, higher AP very quickly can change the game. So, I would say that this is, you know, definitely an improvement over a 6 only. 5 and 6 is much better of a jump. So, Slashing Impact. Each time a model with this obsession finishes a charge move, you can select one enemy unit, excluding vehicles, within engagement range and roll a d6. On a d6, that enemy unit suffers one mortal wound. Okay. You know, once again, pumping out one mortal wound, cool. But, and you have to get it on a 6. So first you have to do the charge move, into an enemy unit, so you already need to roll, you know, better than however far away you are, which typically, hopefully, you're at 7 inches or less away. But then you gotta, you know, roll a d6, and then you have to get a 6 for the enemy unit to suffer one mortal wound. It's okay.
and it's only one mortal wound. You're not hurting every single dude based on how many dudes you're throwing at them. It's just one random dude pokes them in the eye. So next, Stimulant Innovators. Once per battle in your command phase, you can declare that units of this obsession will use their experimental concoctions. When you do so, roll a d3 on the combat drugs table. Every unit with this obsession that has the combat drugs ability gains an additional ability, which is cumulative with abilities they already have until the end of the turn. So, being that you roll 1d3, so it's very limiting. At that point, you either get Adrenalite, Hypex, or Serpentine. It's okay. To be able to do that whole thing for multiple units and not just the one that has like that file bouquet thing or whatever. So, but at the same time, you're limited on which combat drugs you get. So, next, Test of Skill. Each time a model with a obsession makes a melee attack that targets a monster or vehicle, add one to that attack's wound roll. Anything that boosts the wound roll is good by me. Trophy Takers. Each time a morale test is taken for an enemy unit that had any models destroyed by a melee attack made by a unit with this obsession, roll one additional d6 and discard the lowest result. You and your opponent aren't frequently going to be using morale tests, generally speaking, or at minimum, they're not as crazy as you would think. So this is okay. The new morale rules can result in a lot more dudes being lost and stuff in the process, but this is only okay. Lastly, Agile Hunters, which is also all-consuming. Each time a model with this obsession makes an attack that targets a unit that can fly, add one to that attack's hit roll. Very, 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 very specific. Has to be against a unit that flies. There are a decent amount of them in the game, but it's not going to typically be a whole lot of use to just Joe Schmo. It's usually going to be specific to your characters to do that damage. So, and then we have, as part of that, if a unit with this obsession with the combat drugs ability has the Hypex ability, add 4 inches to that unit's move characteristic instead of 3. Why instead of 3? I thought Hypex was just 2. Interesting. I'll have to look into that a little bit more. I was looking at the number 4 when I said that. So, overall, Cult of Strife is my favorite out of the cults that are available. But I would say overall, none of these are bad. Just some are not as good as others. So, but I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. Like I said, I will be shooting to hopefully just get the rest of this codex out of the way in next week's episode, but time restraints may result in a similar thing where we just cover the Homunculus Covens or something like that. So, but thank you guys for watching. As always, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheRegimentalVoxPodcast. You can follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. And then you can also follow the painting studio, which reminds me, I've got some pictures that I need to edit and upload to the painting studio. On Facebook, facebook.com/dangerclosepaintingstudio. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. And I will see you all later. Thank you for listening. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.